Welcome to Another Opening, Another Show, a musical theatre podcast brought to you by Jane Feast and Jane Suter at Gawler Broadcasting Association here on Kaurna Land. The premise of our show is to explore the great musicals of past and present, one at a time per episode. Our difference is that we're going to be using an advent calendar of shows, in that each month we open the door, hence another open and another show, and see what lies behind it. At the preview session, we opened the first door and it revealed, take it away, Jane.
Kiss Me, Kate.
That almost sounded like you were singing it, but we're not going to do that because that would be
copyright.
That's right. So we don't have another open and another show as our theme tune, and this is how much we're allowed to sing of it. Da, 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 da. Can't even do pin, just another ope. We will be talking about lots of glorious music over the coming months, and you will need to follow the program notes or head down your Google and get into a rabbit hole of Kiss Me Kate, Cole Porter, or Howard Keel, or all the things that this is going to prompt while we have this chat. This is episode number one of Another Opening, Another Show, the Musical Theatre Podcast. We encourage you to get onto the social media. We do Facebook and Instagram. And share to all of your friends.
Yes, please.
Because we're going to have a lot of fun and we hope you're going to have a lot of fun. And we welcome interaction as well. But, you know, if you've got nothing nice to say, just scroll on by, as Burt Bacharach and Hal David didn't say.
But no copyright. No copyright.
Well, they didn't say it, did they?
They didn't, actually. No. You're quite correct.
So, welcome to Kiss Me, Kate, a musical about a play within a play, written by, well, music and lyrics by Cole Porter, and the writing credits are to Sam and Bella Spiewak. I have listened to many, many podcasts and documentaries to find out whether it's Spiewak, Spiewak, or Spiewak, and from people old enough to know, it is Spiewak.
Excellent, because I did read it and had no idea at all on how that was pronounced.
Yes.
So I haven't included it in any of my written material.
No, I just keep calling them Sam and Bella.
Great. Love that. Little Sam and Bella.
Now, Jane S. is going to lead us through the synopsis of the show.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Jane. Jane mentioned earlier, Kiss Me, Kate is a play within a play. And as we've said, it revolves around the production of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, starring an ex-couple, Fred Graham and Lily Vanessi. Fred is playing Petruchio and Lily is cast as Catherine, the titular Kate. So Act 1 opens with the musical number Another Opening, Another Show, where the cast and crew of Taming of the Shrew welcome the viewer into their theatre as they rehearse. Fred Graham is the director, producer and lead in the show. He also thinks of himself as quite the Casanova, pursuing one of the younger cast members, Lois Lane, even though her boyfriend is also part of the cast. Lily, that's his ex-wife, is furious to discover that her ex-husband is interested in Lois, and her anger is very much on show. At the end of that first rehearsal, Lois's boyfriend sneaks back into the theatre. He's been out gambling and has run up an enormous debt, which he's left an IOU for. But he's put the IOU in the name of Fred Graham. Lois is cross when she finds out about this, as she sees the production of Taming of the Shrew as their big chance. She sings Why Can't You Behave? As they're getting ready for the show to open, Lily and Fred meet backstage. She shows off her enormous engagement ring that she's received from her wealthy older fiancé named Hal. She also points out to Fred that it's the anniversary of their divorce. Together, they reminisce about how they met on an earlier show by singing Wunderbar to each other. Fred is then accosted by the gangsters who work for the boss that Lois's boyfriend Bill left his IOU with. The gangsters want the money for their boss, but when Fred says the show must go on, they threaten to return after the show. While this gangster business is going on, Lily receives flowers in her dressing room with the stagehands and dresses telling her that they're from Fred. She's delighted, in spite of her fury with him, that he's pursuing another woman in the show. She sings So In Love. Fred learns that the flowers he meant for Lois have gone to his ex-wife Lily, and he tries to get them and the card that's with them back. However, Lily is so delighted with them, she takes the card on stage with her. The Taming of the Shrew begins on stage with We Open in Venice. The Taming of the Shrew starts with Baptista, a wealthy gentleman, unable to agree to his second daughter being married without his elder daughter being married first. And sadly for Baptista and for his second daughter Bianca, his first daughter Kate is disagreeable to the idea of marriage and men in general. Bianca seems like she's really not fussy about who she'll marry and sings Tom, Dick or Harry to her three suitors to indicate that she really doesn't have a preference. I will interject here and say I found that peculiar when I was watching it. I'm not a big Shakespeare aficionado. I didn't know that was part of the story and was quite overwhelmed by the fact that she'd just marry any old body. Anyway, you can cut that out. Well,
I think it's to show the difference between the girls, because you weren't marrying anybody for love in those days. She has three suitors, and in their lyrics, they show that they're three different kinds of men. The first one is a self-made man. The next one is a bit of a gambler and a chancer. So he's got money now, but who knows? And the third one is a thoroughbred, but he has a decaying family tree. So they'll have the title, but no money. Mm-hmm. And you'll be left with a death tax.
Understand.
So she's got, so Shakespeare presumably is saying, these are your choices. Your choice is to be an angry spinster,
yes,
and have your own actual standards. Or you're left with Tom, Dick or Harry.
Yes.
And you just choose which one might be the best outcome for you, not a love outcome, just where can I see my life going with this guy?
Hope for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is actually a very good insight. Petruchio, who's played by Fred, wants to marry into money. So the other young men work together to help him ingratiate himself with Kate's father, Baptista, to seek Kate's hand in marriage. Kate couldn't be less interested and sings I Hate Men to everyone to make her views as clear as possible. After this largely ignored statement from this young woman, Lily leaves the stage and has the chance to read the card that came with Fred's flowers. She's outraged to discover the flowers were meant for Lois. Storms back onto stage, berating Fred. The rest of the cast stay in their Shakespearean characters as they work towards the arrangement of Kate and Petruchio's nuptials. As this goes on, Lily tries to slap Fred, but he takes her and spanks her on stage. They then continue to fight off stage. Lily says she's leaving the show and calls for her fiancé to come and collect her. Fred tells the henchman of the gangster that if Lily leaves before the show has run its week-long season, he won't be able to pay them what they're owed. They threaten Lily and make her stay with the show at gunpoint. A dance number follows after that. The next scene then sees Kate and her money-hungry suitor married. The gangster's henchmen are now part of the cast in Shakespearean costume, ensuring that Lily stays in the show. Petruchio begs his new wife for a kiss and she refuses. He sings Kiss Me Kate and in the end steals a kiss. Act 2 of Kiss Me Kate then opens with a song called Too Darn Hot, sung by the cast and crew in the interval of their performance of Taming of the Shrew. Act 2 shows the hard work that Petruchio is putting into taming his shrew of a new wife. She, however, isn't having a bar of it, and he's somewhat regretful that he's married a woman who doesn't just do exactly as instructed. He sings Where is the life that late I led in lamentation of the wonderful bachelor life he's left behind. While this is happening on stage, Lily's fiancé turns up off stage to help her. He meets Lois backstage and she recognises him as a former flame of hers. They agree not to tell Lily, but Bill overhears and challenges Lois about her faithfulness to him. She performs always true to you in my fashion.
So she's saying to him, why can't you behave because of his gambling? And then in Act 2, oh, but it's okay for me to have flings all over the place, but I love you.
Flings aren't gambling, Jane. Come on. It's all about the money. Come on, man. Lily tries to tell her fiancé that she's being forced to stay at the theatre against her will, even at gunpoint, but he doesn't believe her. Fred, who's also backstage by this point, makes several pointed remarks about how dull her life will be if she marries her fiancé and leaves the theatre behind. Hal hands it up in the role of an old sugar daddy. The gangsters, meanwhile, discover that their boss, for whom they're collecting on the IOU, has died, and so the IOU is invalid. Fred is off the hook. The henchmen try to leave the theatre, and Lily leaves shortly after them now that they aren't forcing her to stay. However, she leaves without her fiancé, Howell. Fred again tries to keep her there. Lucy's effort to leave the theatre prove fruitless, and they somehow get themselves on stage where they perform a comic ode to Shakespeare. Brush up your Shakespeare. The company performing The Taming of the Shrew are now ready for the finale, which features the wedding of the younger sister, Bianca, played by Lois, and her beau. Kate is not on stage at the start of the scene, but makes a dramatic entrance, where she is asked to mend her shrewish ways once and for all. In response, she sings, "I am ashamed that women are so simple." Pause for massive eye rolling. What is that about? And then Fred and Lily reconcile wordlessly on stage.
Yes, the art to doing the ending of the piece to any, or really to any woman ever, but certainly a post-1950s audience, is in the acting. She is coming back to Fred. Now, Lily is coming back to Fred. She is singing this thing from the Shakespeare, quote, like directly from the Shakespeare, "I am ashamed that women are so simple to offer war where they should stand for peace." It is questionable even in The Shrew. So you have to have a good actor showing the audience that she does not agree with what she is spouting out. This is her paid gig. It's not what Bella, Sam, or Cole think is a woman's job either, and it's not Lily Vanessi. It is, "I am finishing this show that was written." It was within the show, written by Fred, that Lily has to say this and put her hand under his foot. Where do we go with that? Now, usually it's just communicated through the body language of the Kate. In 2019, the Broadway producers saw that this was not nearly feminist enough and hired Amanda Green, who is the daughter of the famous Adolph Green of Commsman Green, who's written many successful musicals, and is a writer in her own right, to come and feminise the language. Some of it is successful. This one, she changes it to, "I'm ashamed that people are so simple to offer war where they should offer peace," and is really criticising the villagers all around them. That's how that's being delivered. But as it goes on, it becomes less, to me, sensible in relation to what's come before in The Taming of the Shrew.
Yes, and I think you're right. I think it's the fact that the play is called The Taming of the Shrew. That in itself has all kinds of problems that you can't fix by changing a couple of lyrics. But at the same time, do you need to change it because it's Shakespeare and that's how it was written and was appropriate hundreds and hundreds of years ago? Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. They also needed to change when Baptista says at the beginning, "I need to find a man who has fed her, wed her and bed her," which is a pretty off-putting, you know, dad of a teenage daughter saying that.
That's what I'm thinking. Imagine a dad saying that.
Our day.
Yes.
Do we do Kiss Me, Kate, if we need to change all of the stuff that is not to our taste anymore? A lot of the audience would not have noticed. I was watching a different version the other day where lines were changed. I don't see anything wrong with what was there before. It wasn't an opinion about women that they were offering. They just had changed that rhyming couplet. I can't for the life of me think why. Just, and as someone who has played a lot of this music, I just thought, that's just odd. Yeah, a change for change's sake. So change is necessary. I think a lot of the reason we haven't seen many productions of it is partly because of a perception of its sexist stance rather than a knowledge of what it really is. And also, it's awful from a casting point of view. Two women plus the maid who gets to sing a little bit of another show.
Yes.
So three women and seven men. Now, in a community theatre setting, that's topsy-turvy.
Absolutely, in a community theatre setting, that is 100% the inverse of what
we really get.
More likely turn up, correct.
But ever since the late 90s, I think, I have had an image in my head of when I do this show, even though at that time I was a late teenager, but I was planning it, when I do this show, I'd like to cast women as the gangsters. Still gangsters in their sharp suits, but female actors. And it occurred to me, and I can't remember what I saw, but I thought at the time, Whoopi Goldberg and Ellen DeGeneres in cute sharp suits being the gangsters. I don't know, my gangster suddenly went to the East End just then, but anyhow, I don't know what the Baltimore rough accent is.
Sure, sure, sure. And do you know what? I actually picture them as New York toughs anyway, not Baltimore, so who yes knows?
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's from the movie, you okay might, because I think it's the New York version in the movie. I didn't get the feeling that...
Look, but, it could be.
Yeah.
Boss.
Yeah. So, and anyway, whatever accent you can do that tells you gangster, go with that one. particularly in a community theatre setting.
Absolutely.
So I would cast us as the gangsters.
You and me, Jane?
Yes.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yes, in the far off distance, because also we can be any age over 40, as long as we can do the mild slapstick that they need to do.
Sure.
But it really, that would solve an on-stage presence issue.
That would redress the gender balance.
Because what was also interesting about this 2019 version where they feminized it, they're so concerned about all this misogyny, quotes, that they got Amanda Green to change the words. So I've done kind of a history of the show.
Great.
Of the creation of the show. Now,
fantastic.
Dear listener, Kiss Me, Kate, the play within the play that they are performing is The Taming of the Shrew by William Shakespeare.
A classic.
And thankfully, there's an awful lot of dialogue that just sticks to the Shakespeare, and even three or four numbers that are almost entirely from the Shakespeare, with maybe just a little modern tweak. That is gratifying. The music is different. Sometimes it sounds sort of Renaissance Italy, sometimes, but there's a reason for it sounding so modern.
I did think it was actually quite interesting how integrated the music and lyrics were to the story.
Yes.
You may be going to discuss that, but I...
No.
I just thought that was quite often the music from musicals can stand somewhat outside of the story, perhaps. But I think in this show that it's very much integrated.
Well, that's one of the features of this, is that it was written in 1938, the beginning of the idea was 1938. And that was just hot on the heels of Oklahoma. And really between Showboat and Oklahoma, all those musicals were plays that had 10 to 12 songs that could really be sung by anybody at any time, which we have since experienced those songs being plucked out of those unsuccessful musicals. But the songs are great, particularly Gershwin and Porter.
Correct.
And then flipped into something in the 90s like Crazy for You, a more entertaining or less cringeworthy script than the original one.
Yeah.
In that case, Crazy for You, it was actually most of that is taken out of Girl Crazy. Girl Crazy is a very good show, launched Ethel Merman and Ginger Rogers on Broadway, and became a really big musical about 10 years later with Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney, but got changed quite a lot for the taste of general American public in
at
the 40s.
Yeah.
And so we have Anything Goes, for example. You can actually license three or four different versions of Anything Goes for your amateur dramatic society, and they have quite different scripts, and some of them have 4 to 8 different songs. So if you want to produce it, you've got to make sure you've read all four of them to work out which one you had in your head when you went, I love that show, let's do it next year.
Yeah.
Because it might not have Take Me Back to Manhattan in it, which in some versions is the opening of Act Two, because that was actually written by Cole for a show that went nowhere back in the 20s.
So, yes. But back to Kiss Me, Kate.
Yes.
I think you would struggle to pull really almost any of these songs out.
I've come to why that Wealthily in Padua doesn't lend itself to Spider-Man.
No. No, absolutely not. Yeah. Very intrinsic.
Yeah, so they call it an integrated musical. That's a term that I've come up with in a lot of my reading over the last couple of weeks, meaning the words and music are telling the story and advancing the plot.
Together.
Showboat was the very first to do that in 1927. Then everybody didn't like that. And we went back to doing, here's a funny script, boy meets girl, and there's a comedy couple and a few dancers, and we sing and dance and we have a great time, but nothing substantial.
Almost like a vaudeville show of different bits and pieces. Yep.
And then along came Oklahoma and changed the whole thing. And we wouldn't have musical theatre as it is today if we didn't have Oklahoma. But that will, I'm sure, be in another edition of this podcast.
Jane, it sounds like you've peeked behind those advent calendar doors. I'm not sure I'm on board with this.
I have a feeling, a very strong feeling, that Oklahoma will be in the top 100 shows. Pretty sure. Sorry about my croakiness all of a sudden. So here is my little lecture on the behind the scenes of the creation of Kiss Me, Kate. In 1938, a stage manager called Arnold St. Subba, whose father was a major ticket sales agent in New York City, was working backstage on a version of Taming of the Shrew, which starred the very famous acting couple of Lunt and Fontanne, and there is still a theatre called after them in New York to this day. They did a, quote, jazz version of the Taming of the Shrew. So they had very, very modern music, underscoring the massive emphasis on the slapstick, or the hitting each other a lot.
The aggressive physical violence.
Yes, right. They really did play into all of that aspect of the Taming of the Shrew. Not really delving into characterization and what makes her so mad about being married off to who knows who. They just were fighting. The audience were heard to say, or one matron patron, as we shall call her, said, "But it isn't Shakespeare, is it?" Now, that was on tour in Philadelphia when St. Supper was working backstage. Over the years, he just put that little germ in his head about the Taming of the Shrew and the fact that Lunt and Fontanne took so much delight in bashing each other up on stage, because as soon as they got off stage, they were verbally bashing each other up. They had the most tumultuous toxic marriage, according to every Broadway legend you can hear. They never split up. They seemed to kind of feed off that energy. That, coupled with the behaviour of Kate and Petruchio in the play, made St. Supper go, "I think I should ask someone to do a play about this." So he sent for his friend Bella Spiewak, who at that time had separated from Sam, because they had a bit of a toxic relationship too.
It really is the theme of Kiss Me, Kate.
It
that
is.
Could be there.
Yes, because it's not just Kate and Petruchio. It's the other couple are also not healthy in their behaviour.
So it absolutely makes sense that the writers would also fall into this. Absolutely. Yes. I don't think you can work on this if you're in a healthy relationship.
Well, you've got a lot more to draw from if you have been in a warring couple.
This is true. This is very true.
So thought about writing a play within a play. Our St. Supper and Bella have both said many times that it was their own idea to contact Cole Porter. So whoever contacted Cole Porter, good on them, because it became a massive, wonderful and clever show. But it was a risk asking Cole Porter at that stage, because he had had Anything Goes many years before. Then in 1937, he was at a friend's farm riding horses, fell off and broke both his legs. They should have been amputated, according to the doctors, but he could not fathom a life like that. So he was determined to use walking sticks and do his best. And in a time when physiotherapy was in its infancy.
Absolutely.
So he lived in pain. So we had no success in the theatre, the Depression, then the Second World War. The Depression didn't affect Cole on a personal level because he did have a lot of money and he kept living his life the way he liked it. But nobody would touch him with a barge pole to produce anything that he had written. But Bella was adamant and she turned his head with the idea of the Taming of the Shrew. it is said that when she gave him her first draft of the script, he was so inspired, he wrote two complete numbers in one weekend, and they never were amended.
What?
I know. Now, I don't know which two. I think it was Why Can't You Behave? And I've Come to Wife of Wealthy and Padua, or another one of the Shakespearean ones.
Okay.
Just to be so flawless in your first draft, amazing. And I'm sure that that is to do with what Bella provided him with as a script.
Yeah.
Then we went on out-of-town tryouts. And as is referred to in another opening in another show, you go to Philly, Boston or Baltimore. Now, this all happened in Philadelphia, but in Kiss Me, Kate, their tryout is set in Baltimore, and they refer to being in Baltimore quite a lot.
The hot weather, oh, the
it's so
hot Baltimore
sticky.
Weather. Yeah.
I've been to Baltimore for a morning.
And did you leave because you were melting?
The fall. It was October. So humid. It was humid like Sydney. Not tropical, but humid. And where we found ourselves was very industrial. So the air just felt heavy. And I feel that the old buildings of Baltimore, it's a very small place, are just not environmentally friendly. Right? The founding fathers just didn't think about ventilation.
Sure, sure.
Coming from Europe.
No, so. No, ventilation wasn't a big consideration. And look, I feel like ventilation probably, and environmental concerns weren't really a big consideration for a very long time.
Certainly
wherever
not the 18th
you were from,
century.
Yeah.
So that is why it is too darn hot at the opening of Act Two, because it is sticky heat. The producers chose Philadelphia, where, legend has it, St. Supper crewed for the lunch and watched that on-off stage relationship, which was, shall we say, functional for them, occur.
Functional for them. Yeah. Put that in air quotes. Yep.
But during the creation of Kiss Me, Kate, the producers leaned on Bella heavily to add comic relief because, yes, it's funny to a degree watching the slapstick of these melting relationships, but it's not out-and-out funny because they're still relationships not working well. So it is reported that St. Supper, probably reported by him, had the idea of adding in some gangsters and that Bella should ask Sam to come, her soon-to-be ex-husband, to come and write the comedy parts. As Bella says, she insisted on having Sam and she insisted, apparently, on having his name in the credits before hers, even though she wrote at least 75% of the show.
Right. Why did she say why?
I haven't found that, but maybe if I went on a deep Bella Spiewak dive, I might find her reasons.
Mm.
Whatever her reasons, that is what she did. So in my childhood, I grew up with the score in our house. In my mind, it says Kiss Me, Kate by Cole Porter and Sam and Bella Spiewak. Lucky Sam. In the time of out-of-town tryouts, which don't really exist anymore, these days, they would rather it all happen on Broadway and do a month of previews because of the cost element of moving sets
everything.
And all the people to Philadelphia or Baltimore or whatever. That doesn't allow for that privacy of, oh, gee, that number's a stinker. Let's just chuck that. Because everybody's around now, and now everyone's got their phone on, even when they shouldn't, taking snippets from backstage and then taking it over the road to rival producers or what have you. The tryout was a fabulous idea and a great way for creatives to keep it under their hat while they fiddled around. There was no fiddling to be done. This is the first and last show that I'm aware of where the out-of-town tryout is exactly what you saw on the Broadway stage.
Wow.
Nobody cut anything.
Wow, that's quite amazing.
Yeah. And that's because of this absolute dream team of Bella Spiewak and Cole Porter and a bit of Sam.
A little bit of Sam. Just a sprinkle.
I mean,
yeah.
To give Sam his due, those gangsters are a marvellous creation and incredibly funny. So I'm so glad whoever asked him to come and do it did it. That is pretty much the whole origin of Kiss Me, Kate. Now, I said nothing was taken out, but something had to be added in. The song Bianca, which is the least good song in the show.
Wow.
Most
people. Tell us what you really think, James.
No, this is not just my impression. I have heard many people, very learned, and other people who are just chatters like us, who love, say, oh, Bianca. There is a story behind that. The man playing Bill, who sings the song Bianca, to Lois, who plays Bianca, but he's singing it to Lois backstage, but he calls it Bianca. He couldn't really sing. He was hired to be a dancer. His acting was fine, but he kicked up a stink because he didn't have a solo. And so we gave him a solo, but we gave him a solo that only played to his strengths, which were few. So it doesn't have the most inspiring melody because he didn't have the capacity to sing like Alfred Drake or anybody else in that show. That's why it's not the most fabulous part.
That is interesting.
Mm. I have seen productions where they have kind of minimized the song or the singing of the song, I should say, and because he's a dancer, created a big dance number out of it. Our friend Selena told me the other day that she saw it in London in the probably in 2001, but it's the 1999 production, where the man playing Bill was just a most amazing dancer and was kind of climbing up the walls like Fred Astaire did with the magic of a film, but he was doing it in reality up the walls. Totally changed that number.
Right.
So
yes.
I think that's the way to deal with it. If you've got a marvellous singer, he could probably pull something great out of it because, you know, if you had Frank Sinatra singing Up in the Teapot, it still would have been something wonderful. Well, that is probably the weakest part of that show. It's better than a lot of secondary male lead solo numbers in lots of other things.
Yeah.
I can only... Yeah, it's a marvel that this show was written so quickly and so well and never got tinkered with. There was a wonderful story. Lisa Kirk, who played the original Lois / Bianca, she was at the opening night party. And now remember that Cole had been living in pain and forced himself to be ambulant. He was so buoyed by the success of this show because this is back in the days when people actually thought about giving a standing ovation, not just every time they went to see a show. This is the thing these days.
Maybe shows these days are just that good, Jane.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, carry on. Move on. Yep, keep going.
Yes, but this is not on the production value of a show. This is on the writing of a show when it's a premiere. See, we don't get to experience premieres, particularly in Australia, very much. So what they're applauding was not how good that thing was. Did the chandelier swing down? Was the dancing great? Now, all of these things may have occurred, but what they were applauding was the writing. Yeah. And Cole was on cloud nine because he had been told that this might just not fly, no matter how good he was, because of people's opinion of him over the last 15 years with minimal output and what there was a bit not fabulous. He walked in, according to Lisa Kirk, and tossed aside his twin walking sticks and practically bounced up the stairs to celebrate the splendid reception of Kiss Me, Kate. He sent a telegram to a friend that simply said, success equals coal. Stop.
That is lovely.
I just think that's a brilliant story. I don't know Lisa Kirk. I don't know if she was up to exaggeration, but I can't see why she would. Well, why would you make that up? I just think that's marvellous.
It is marvellous. And you know what? Even if she did make it up, I'm going to presume that she didn't. And enjoy it as though it's a true story.
Yeah.
Because it's lovely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A triumph. It's good. Good.
I have another segment in mind, which we might work on next time, called Any Dream Will Do, or I Had a Dream. I Dreamed a Dream. where we have a dream cast.
Oh.
Now, I'd stumped. I could see maybe Jackman doing Frederick Graham.
Sure.
But I couldn't really think of who we might put in these other parts.
Obviously, you and I are the gangsters. That's taken care of. That's done.
With Hugh Jackman. Are we in the same production with
Hugh Jackman? Yes, we are. Oh, awesome. Dream Jackman. Did you not hear the word dream?
Yes.
You said it.
We don't all have to be of the same pay rate.
Although, look, if someone wants to boost me up to Hugh Jackman's pay rate, I'll accept
it. I'm happy with that.
That's fine. Yeah, I'll take
that's
it.
That's fine.
Yeah, great.
Yes.
Good.
Or if he wants to come pay his subs in the community theatre version, we'll do that too.
Look, I suspect most community theatre groups would accept that offer from Hugh.
They might even waive his subs.
Look, maybe. But, yeah.
Well, he wouldn't be covered by insurance.
No, it's up to each individual group to decide what's best for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have had a lovely time doing this podcast.
We certainly have.
And it is now time to go behind the next door and reveal what next month's show is.
Do we have a door sound effect to put on our... You can insert that here later when the editing is done. Oh, Jane, that was amazing.
That wasn't a door. That was just my bones.
Here we go. It is...
Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls? Fantastic. Another classic, Jane. Love it. Maybe next time we'll start with our dream cast and then we'll...
Maybe.
Hugh Jackman, I suspect, is going to...
Well, yes, he could.
Yeah.
Get a bit long in the tooth.
I'd accept it. If he's willing, I'm on board.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We also have to look for parts for us.
Yes. Well, yes, absolutely.
All right. Lovely to chat and hope it was a lovely time listening to us.
Thank you, listeners. Hope you've enjoyed.
And tell everyone you know.
Everyone.
That you love it. Don't tell them if you don't.
No, do tell them and make them listen anyway. Tell everyone.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not fussy.
Don't tell them to contact us. But
no, that's right. Listen and then shush. Yeah, great.
Thank you so much, dear listener. Bye-bye.